Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, 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 Life Transformation Radio listeners. This is your host, Sean Douglas, speaker, trainer, author, and with me today is Meredith Brown. Welcome to the show, Meredith.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Very happy to be here.
So, we are going to rethink, reframe, and relax with Meredith Brown today. She lives in Greenwood, South Carolina, with her husband, Greg, and her three girls. After receiving her Master of Science in Clinical Practice from Augusta State University, she began teaching full-time at a local college. At the time, as a single parent working full-time and going to school, she needed to find something to help her manage her stress. Over the past 15 years, she has done extensive research in the area of stress management. She will tell you she discovered just the OMMM isn't enough. She needed more to manage her immensely stressful, busy life. Getting married and becoming a blended family was very stressful, but with the birth of her youngest daughter, the reality of stress taking away joy really hit home. Her youngest child has Dravet syndrome and many
Dravet
critical
syndrome.
Care
mm-hmm.
needs. Dravet. Okay, yeah, I was like, what? You have Dravet?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, you're good. It's French. It looks French.
So she's done trainings with college students, companies, individuals, to basically help find the freedom from stress. Passion and research motivate her to spread the word about stress and how it can be managed to improve life satisfaction and enjoy our moments rather than worry them away. Let me tell you, will pull worry from the future, and they will pull worry from the past, and they'll pull worry from future, and they will pull worry from everywhere. So, tell us about that. Tell us about rethinking, reframing, and relaxing.
Well, it all kind of spawned from, prior as a single mom going through school. I mean, I had my daughter on a Sunday, went back to class on Tuesday. You know, I was told by a lot of people, oh, you can't do this. You should wait. You should stay out. And I was like, no, I need to get this degree. Got to stay focused. So I kind of stayed focused on it. And I had a lot of stressors then. And I've always kind of worked through the stressors by just, you know, bouncing from one thing to another, or really ignoring problems, which is really easy way to do it. But when I hit graduate school, I mean, I just got overwhelmed. I mean, I actually wore a heart monitor my first semester of graduate school because I thought I was having a heart attack. And it turned out it wasn't. It was just stress. It was so much stress. It was panic attacks when I was working and going to graduate school. And I had my daughter, which, you know, she needed her time. And so it just was so much going on. So I started researching kind of ways to, you know, cope with my own stressors that were going on, time management techniques, things like that. And I got into a lot of like the OM stuff, like the yoga and the relax this and the OM, and it just wasn't
about,
enough.
Like, OMMMM.
Yeah. Yes.
I was always like, OM, like OMMMM.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really good stuff. Like, it's really great stuff. Like, yoga,
absolutely.
It's so super good for you. Mindfulness, absolutely. And of course, mindfulness is a little bit beyond the OM as well. But, you know, but it's just not enough. I mean, you've got to pair it with some other things. And really, I did fine once I got out of graduate school and got what I considered, you know, just a job. I was teaching psychology at a college, and I love teaching. It's absolutely a passion of mine. And I had been there about a year, and somebody was like, well, you seem like you're really put together. You know, you should do a stress management. Can you teach stress management to some of our students? And I was like, I guess I can. So I put together like a little stress management topic Tuesday thing, test anxiety thing. And they loved it. So I was like, well, that was fun. And then I gave it to them. I said, here you go, you know, use it, whatever. And then I kind of started just reading more and more about it, reading more and more about how to conquer stress, what to do with stress. But honestly, I wasn't really that stressed out. And then I had my daughter, Erin, and, you know, blended families are hard. And so that was, you know, that was going on. I had Erin, who her first seizure lasted over an hour and 45 minutes. It took a very long time to stop the seizure. I was completely wigging out. It got to the place where joy had been completely ripped out of my life. I mean, it was, even my oldest daughter was sitting there, you know, breathing like a fish. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, breathing. And I'm like, why are you breathing like that? She's like, because I can't breathe well. And I ran her to the hospital. She had this terrible asthma attack, but she didn't want to say anything to me because she knew I was so stressed out about her sister. And it was like, oh, no, we can't live this way. Like, we cannot live this way.
So I
started really digging hard into ways to find moments of joy in my life, because there's such high burnout in being a caregiver of a special needs, critical needs kids. And also two others, Princess, the Ninja, and the Dragon, respectfully. The Princess is my older. The middle is my Ninja, who's my stepdaughter. And then the Dragon is Erin, who has Dravet syndrome. But so I put the stuff together, and basically I found myself educating myself about what stress actually is, and that's the rethink part. So putting together the what stress actually is and really educating myself about what happens to your body when you go under stress. And we all know, like, well, when you're under stress, your heart beats faster. We know the basics.
Right.
What a lot of the times we don't know is, like, there's new research out that has showed that 43% individuals who believe they had high stress and stress was harmful had a 43% higher death rate than individuals who had high stress. Yeah, than individuals who had high stress but believed it was helpful. So people that believe stress is helpful and is a challenge, their body releases more oxytocin and less cortical steroid. So they actually have kind of what you can consider an excitement response to stressors. Even if they're just as, even if it's just as challenging, you know, they look at it as a challenge. You know, this is common, this is happening, it's a challenge, I need to take care of it, I need to work through it. And so they don't have the same physiological responses that you might see in individuals that have believe that stress is very harmful. So just changing your perception, just educating yourself about what stress is, the Yerkes-Dodson rule about how, you know, we need a little eustress, you know, we need the good stress in our life because it motivates us and it keeps us motivated. It's like being on the radio show. You know, I was a little bit nervous. I was like, okay, I'm going to be on a radio show, a little bit nervous. Especially, you know, with all the cool stuff that you've been doing, I'm like, I'm on a radio show with Sean. I'm a little nervous. But that little bit of nervousness helped me to prepare to do well. So that's like the rethinking part. And then the reframing part is where we kind of get into some really cool work. This is where we start talking about problematic thinking. Problematic thinking, irrational beliefs, self-efficacy, like what you believe you're capable of. Because what we find is if people believe they can do something, they're more likely to persist and they're more likely to be successful. So just believing isn't enough, as you've said a bazillion times. You know, obviously you can't just say, I wish this could happen. I think this can happen. You have to work. I mean, there's work involved. And so if you have a higher self-efficacy, believing that you can get through a hard time or get through something, then you're more likely to persevere to continue to make the attempt. So we talk about self-efficacy, then we learn about locus of control. We go through doing testing, things like that, teaching about locus of control. What is your locus of control? Do you believe that your fate is determined by external factors, situational factors, or do you believe that you have some control in there? People that believe that they have some control over their fate, you know, obviously are going to be more resistant to stress because they can look at a stressor and know, well, I can't control the situation maybe, but I can control my response to the situation, which is the same like with my daughter. I obviously can't take away. Firmly. I'm a very strong believer in that like with my daughter, I mean, I obviously can't take away that she has a genetic disorder. She's going to have it the rest of her life, but I can't educate myself enough to be able to know what best care she needs. And that's the control I can't have. So even though it's kind of out of my control, I can still control to how I respond to what's going on in my environment. So we do some of that, which is the reframing part. We also talk about irrational beliefs. You know, we talk about one of Albert Ellis's irrational beliefs that he talks about is that our past is so influential on us that it has to define our future. And that's just not the case. There's so many people that, well, I tried school once, but I can't, you know, I didn't do well, so there's no reason for me to go back. I bombed my first two semesters of college, first three, really. I had like 12 Fs and a B because the piano teacher didn't know who I was. So I think that's why I got a B. But just bombed it all. And when I was 26, I said, you know, I think I want to try college again. And a lot of the comments were, well, you know, you didn't make it last time. It's just going to be a waste of money. And I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. And believe it or not, I got in there and I did so well. It was like I was just cognitively ready. You know, it's like I had matured enough. I was able to do it. So if I would have based my past on what I was doing with my future, I never would have gone to school. So it's kind of one of those things that hold people back a lot with the, you know, you have an event that happens in your life, a breakup or something, and I'll never meet anyone like her again. Well, you know, she stole your truck and your best friend ran off with her to Vegas. So you might not want to find someone like her again. You know, so it's really reframing those kind of beliefs. You know, what is the true belief? And my best example that I usually save quite often, I don't tell in big groups because it's a hard one to tell, but I'm sitting across from my daughter, and every time I looked at her, I was like, is she going to seize? Is she seizing? Is that a seizure? Is she twitching? Is her stare off? Is she seizing? And I just kept looking at her, and every thought I had, like every other thought was, is she seizing? And this is not a way to live. And so she looked at me, she said, Mom, make a snake. And I suddenly realized I'm playing with Play-Doh right now. Like, I need to stop, think, reframe the moment I'm in, reframe my thinking. Just because my daughter has critical needs doesn't mean she has critical needs at every single second of her life. And so, so that kind of led me to the reframing part. And then, of course, relaxing, which everyone loves this part the most. Anytime I do a little seminar or group workshop, the comments that are at the end have always been, I wish there was a little more time for relaxation. And I'm like, it's a 4-hour workshop. You'd think people would want to get out of there, you know, by like hour three, you think they're going, I don't want to hear this anymore. But, you know, a lot of people say time flew by, but the relaxation part, it's not just the meditation and all that jazz, but it's also talking about positive psychology, which teaches us how to be happy. A lot of the times we learn all the things not to do. Like, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that.
Long list.
It's a huge list, right? But what are we supposed to do? So positive psychology teaches us what makes us happy. And so when I was at Furman, I was doing a thing, a workshop at Furman for their faculty development. And one of the young women, she kind of raised her hand and she said, do you mean like what makes us happy, like activities or reading or like exercising or like maybe like certain foods or friends? And I looked at her, I was like, yes, all that. So it's kind of like we already know what makes us happy, but we're so worried about avoiding things that we're not supposed to do, we forget to do the things that make us happy. So we kind of go over through that. We go over some of that, getting into the flow or your groove, which has been shown to help individuals basically kind of slow the mind down, get into a relaxation state. And for some people, it's cleaning. And for some people, it's, you know, a bath, nice long bath. Some people, it's coloring. I'm not a person who can color, can't do coloring. It makes me anxious. But I do like to clean when I get cleaning. Getting something organized, finishing a project makes me feel really good. I love doing PowerPoints. So finding your flow of something you like to do. And then we kind of get into some other aspects. We talk about progressive muscle relaxation, which absolutely everyone who has any issues with insomnia or hard time sleeping or anything like that, look up Google progressive muscle relaxation. There's so much out there about it. And it is, research has shown it to help individuals significantly help individuals with insomnia and sleep problems. It's used in clinics. It's an incredibly awesome way to get to sleep at night. And of course, we talk about mindfulness and being in the
moment.
I
love mindfulness.
Absolutely. Mindfulness is the best. We talk about the traditional mindfulness, you know, how to be how to be in the moment. And then we talk about some one moment meditation where you're literally changing your set point or changing your reference, your point of reference within that moment. Kind of you close your eyes, big deep breath in, big deep breath out, open your eyes, and then you respond to the situation instead of reacting to it. It gives you a second to just kind of like do that little shift. I tell all my students, do it before you start your test, you know, that 1 minute before your test to get yourself geared up, get your short-term memory ready to work, working memory ready to work is one of the best things you can ever do. And there's a gentleman named Martin Borison that's probably one of the leaders in that area. He's got some really good stuff out there. He's one of the few people I've read outside of like journal articles. Everything I do is kind of based on med journal articles and research based work. I haven't really gotten out there much. I've opened myself up to a lot more, more of what people do. I Googled it about 3 months ago. I Googled stress management workshops and I was like, wow, a lot of people are doing what I'm doing. but there's a lot of good stuff out there. I mean, that's how I crossed, you know, your path when you had heard about my workshop. But the mindfulness of being in the moment is something that is invaluable to me. I've had a traumatic event with Erin. She just decided she wanted to stop breathing completely. And we're standing in the middle of the road. And like, even every time I talk about it, I can envision it. And the neighbor came running out in his SpongeBob SquarePants shorts and went running down the street to get the ambulance to come. And I mean, she was lifeless and I was broken. And the ambulance driver came up and I handed her over and I looked at him and I was like, I don't know what to do. Like so he ran up to the ambulance and I ran inside and got my bag and I came to the car and she was breathing again. And, you know, of course my heart started beating again, but you know, that moment is part of me. And as much as I would like to take that moment and just kind of erase it and remove it from my life, it's not going to go away. It's because it's part of me. So I will be kind of walking down, you know, walking towards the class and I'll just kind of have a flash thought of that moment and I'll stop myself and I'll look around and be like, you know, it's a chilly day and I can feel that breeze on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take a big deep breath and then I'll just keep walking because I don't need to live at that place because I'm in this place. I'm in the present.
Right.
I don't need to take myself to the past. So I talk about that and I teach a little bit about teach a little few techniques about how to become more mindful. So, but that's it.
Absolutely.
That's rethink, reframe, relax. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. And it's so amazing because as a resilience trainer, one of the things that I teach is mindfulness.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so so as a master resiliency trainer, I teach an acceptance class and a mindfulness part comes into play because a lot of people like to put their address in the past and they love to live in those moments instead of living for the future or living in the present, you know. Pick up your address, you know, and place it on the present, you know, quit living in the past, pick up your mailbox, sell that house, you know what I mean? So reframe, right? It's time to reframe.
Oh, yeah, and it's so important to do that. And I love that you just mentioned resilience training. I actually added a tiny little section because I am by no means an expert in resilience yet. I just started researching it.
I am.
Probably I know you are. Well, I was asked to do stress management for some 911 operators, so I started doing research specifically for their needs. And so one of the things that kept popping up was resilience, and they need to be resilient people. They need to be resilient people, and that's one of the things that within my program it kind of teaches the techniques to become resilient. So I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. So I've been doing some research on just resilient people and how one becomes resilient, how genetic is resilience. And I just thought it was so interesting working with the 911 operators because one of the things about resilient people is they're able to let things go. Like they're able, just let it go, because obviously I'm not letting go the memory of my daughter, you know, coming back to me, I like to say it that way, but I'm letting go the pain of that. And so I'm moving forward. I'm pushing forward. And so, but they don't get an ending. They don't get a resolve. I spent 8 hours. My husband would funnel me 911 calls from YouTube and various other places on my headset, and I'd pretend like I was a person listening to the 911 call. Some of them were silly. Some of them were, and I was only doing an 8-hour shift. And by the time I hit like hour six, I looked at my husband. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is traumatizing. And, you know, you have the whole, you know, vicarious trauma and some other things you can go through when you don't experience an event, but you're part of it. And so one of the things about resilient people is they're able to not know the end, but still move forward. And that's hard to do. And so I've just been doing some research on that. So I'll have to send some people your way for sure, if they want to get more deep into the resilience, because that's some awesome, awesome stuff right there. So, and yeah, I've been doing some cool research in that area now. So,
perfect. So, when people ask me about resilience, you know, and I go into the science of it, because really, I mean, science backs a lot of this stuff, and it's a learned behavior. That's all. I mean, resilience. Nobody's born resilient. It's a learned behavior, and it's developed over time. And one of the main things that drove resilience was the fact that they did a London cab driver research, right? So the London cab driver is basically like, we're going to take these 20 London cab drivers and we're going to take 20 other people and we're going to compare their brains. And what they found was that the GPS, the frontal lobe part, where it controls our navigation in our mind, right? And so the navigation, you know, lobe area of the brain was significantly larger than those who do not do that every day, who maybe need to use a GPS to get where they need to go. But the London cab drivers didn't need a GPS because they just know where to go. And so what they found was that in each of the different participants, out of that pool of 20, out of the different participants, a person who was like a musician had a different part of the brain that was larger. And this person who was resilient had a different part of the brain that was larger. And each and every person's job that they had touched on a different part of the lobes of the brains. And they found that, man, if you cultivate that skill, it becomes larger. Every single one of the London cab drivers' brains were exactly the same. They all had the same areas that were highlighted, but they had this huge lit up area of the GPS navigation system in our brain, and nobody else did, because they don't do that all the time. And they concluded that because they constantly drive the routes and they constantly do it every day, that area of the brain has been conditioned to act a certain way.
Oh.
And I was like,
well, they
blows
yeah, well,
my
they,
mind.
It's pretty mind blowing. Some of the research is out about the resilience training as well as the stress management, like with the,
sure.
One of the blogs that I have on my website blog, one of the ones I have is You Gotta Work. Because just like playing a piano, you know, you eventually learn where the keys are. You learn how your hands move. You may have somebody who's a natural talent. I used to nanny for a little boy, 7 years old. He was playing Wind Beneath My Wings as my accompaniment for me to sing it. So,
yeah.
I mean, so he was phenomenal. He was composing by 10. So he was phenomenal.
Wow.
But he still practiced 4 and 5 hours a day because he loved it. So you can have that potential for sure. And then, but it's got to be cultivated. Like you said, it's got to be trained. It's got to be learned. And so you're not going to be a great basketball player if you never touch a basketball, you know, and you're 50 years old and you've never played basketball. You're probably not going to get in the NBA. But, you know, so you've got to cultivate it. And I was talking to somebody and they said, I know I just need to get over the fact that my son has been diagnosed with this disorder. And I looked at her, I was like, what did you just say? She said, well, people are telling me I just need to get over it. And I was like, and why do you, how are you going to do that? Can you tell me where that magic wand is? And she was like, well, I know I need to just, you know, deal with it. And I looked at her, I was like, you're allowed to be upset. You're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to be sad. These are valid ways to feel about this. And
sure,
it's not a getting over it thing. You've got to learn to be able to work through things. And so it's like, it takes practice to learn how to manage stress. It takes practice to learn, just like it takes practice to learn how to play a piano. So that's one of the things I push to people, that if you say, I'm nothing but a pessimist, well, you know, but you can learn to be more optimistic. I mean, there's research out like you're saying, you kind of become who you are with some of the research you're talking about. Well, there's research out, you know, about people that lose a parent or someone that's very close to them before age 11. You know, they have now a concept of, you know, stable and global thinking. And it's stable because you have death is you can't come back from death. Death is death. So that stable thinking is brought to them at an early age. And so they become kind of more stable global thinkers, you know, forever, always. And that's one of the things I teach that we need to reframe. I never get what I want. I always get picked on. Well, challenge that. Do you really never get what you want? Because we just had apple pie last night and you said you wanted apple pie. Do you know what I mean? So starting to challenge those global stable thinking. So that way you can move into a more optimistic mindset. So that's some really cool stuff with regards to working towards becoming stress-free, not because stressors aren't there, because they are not going to go away, but because you're able to respond and react to them better in a way that's healthy.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yep. I like to tell people too.
Agree.
Good. I like to tell people too to stop shooting on themselves, because Albert Ellis would say,
No, you don't.
Yes, you got to stop shooting, because we're always like, I should have done this. Oh, it's the best thing ever. It's from Albert Ellis. It's from Albert Ellis, REBT Therapies, and Antecedent Behaviors and Consequences. Oh, that stuff is so great. And so with the other one, which we probably shouldn't say on air, people will just have to catch the other one in one of our trainings, because it's a little bit worse than shooting. So, and you know what I'm talking about. So, but it makes sense though, because like even with my daughter's medications, she had her tonsils out and she couldn't take anything because they were scared of the seizures. So she had the medication while getting her tonsils out, obviously. But when she came out of it, the only thing she could have is Tylenol, because she's already on medication that slows her, you know, her down. And so Tylenol, I mean, wasn't quite enough. So she refused to swallow, refused to do anything. And she couldn't take her pill. So we had to take her to the hospital. She had to get IV medication. And she couldn't take her Onfi pill. So we just said, well, we're just going to stop the Onfi and see how it goes. And she did so well without the Onfi. And so, of course, I start kicking myself. I should have taken her off Onfi a year ago. And my friend Tamitha was just like, Meredith, how do you know that would have worked then? And I'm like, you know, you're right. Situation's different.
Right.
So, but I was really kicking myself over thinking that I could have done better. When the truth is, I am honestly doing the absolute best I can, because I'm taking it one day at a time and I'm preparing for tomorrow every day. So I think people get real guilty on themselves, and they start that self-defeating behaviors, self-defeating statements. I can't do it. I'm not worth it. You get into the learned helplessness loops and things like stress management, resiliency training. I mean, they're just things that, you know, can really help people to help themselves succeed. So when you're all alone and there's nobody to talk to, you have the techniques to pull yourself through the moment. So
that's absolutely,
so
absolutely,
important.
Because all resilience is, you know, you ask somebody who's like, well, what do you think resilience is? And they always think like, well, it's like bouncing back, or it's, you know, whatever. But really, I mean, resilience is your ability to withstand, recover, and grow through the face of adversity, stress, and life's changing demand. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
It's your ability to
absolutely
withstand everything that you're going through. It is your ability to recover, to bounce back, to become better than you were yesterday. And that is your ability to grow, because you can't just go through the adversity. You have to grow from it. And a lot of what we go through is self-sabotaged. Stupid decisions that we made. We all know that you're supposed to make, you know, let's say you're supposed to save 10% of your income, you know, for savings, and you're supposed to, you know, do the debt snowball, and you know, but yeah, people are out blowing money left and right, and they're like, I don't have any money. Did you know that your car payment's like $700 a month? Do you really need a $700 a month car payment? You know what I mean? You've got like four kids at like,
and you can't do it anymore.
Yeah, right.
For sure.
It's like you got four kids at the age of 26. Don't you think you should stop? You know what I mean? Like there's things that happen. Like what do you need two brand new vehicles, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then that
you can't afford it.
Well, yeah, and why do you need – how is the apartment that's one bedroom, since you're only your one person, how is that not okay? Why do you need the three-bedroom on the fifth floor?
You
know,
house.
So – Yeah. Well, and then I think the instantaneous, like, feel good is something that people are always searching for, because they want to feel better. And I just had a long conversation with my daughter right before I came up here. I kept telling her, I was like, honey, I got to go. I'm going to be on a blog show. I love you. You are number one. Absolutely. You come first. But I got to go. Like, I've been talking to you for 40 minutes. I got to walk. Like, I got to walk, you know. Family comes
45.
First. But, yeah. Okay. Now it's 7. It's 5:20 now. I really got to walk. Like, Sean's going to get worried.
No.
Like, I got to be on the phone. But we had this long talk about, you know, some of the things that people are saying to her. People said to this person, said to that person. And just, like, the silliness of people needing something to say about other people. And she was so fretting and so worrying. She's like, I don't know how to respond. And so one of the things I told her is be yourself, 100% yourself.
Yep.
Just be 100% yourself. And and this too shall pass. Like, you're going to be out of the situation soon. So I'm trying to teach her the resilience of, you know, this moment that you are in right now and these people you are with right now, they won't be there in 10 years. They won't be there in 15 years. Your family will. So when you get stressed out or upset or start fussing at us or being upset with us, you know, we're the ones that are going to be here in 15 years. You know, we're the ones that are always going to be here for you. And so I'm trying to teach her some resilience to be able to do that, not just, like you said, bounce back, but to push through and recover when she gets kind of hit with that, you know, with that, you didn't get this, or you can't do this, or we don't have the money for that. And it's one of the things she's having to kind of to learn. She's been giving up for the last 3 years. She's been giving up going on school trips. She's been giving up going to, you know, she's been giving up so many things because we've been putting money away, saving money for her, because she wanted her senior year to be fantastic. And I told her, if you want your senior year to be fantastic, then you're going to have to start saving money now. Because we don't have it. Like, we don't, I mean, we have food on the table. We have a night, we're comfortable in our house. Our kids are doing well. But, you know, medically speaking, Aaron's very expensive. So I was explaining to her, you've got to set. And so she did. And so this senior year, she's so excited because she has so many opportunities, because she spent 3 years saying, no, I can't go on the school trip, or no, I can't go out with you guys to the beach. And she's been saving that money, squirreling it away. So this year she said, I'm doing everything. And I'm like, yes, you are. And I hope you have a good time doing
awesome.
It. So, yeah, I can't convince her. Well, maybe if you save it for a freshman year in college. And she's like, no way, Mom. I'm like, okay. But I think you hit real good points, though, when you start talking. It's not just bouncing back. Because you know, we can bounce back and still have the physiological negative effects of the stressor that's weighing on us. And we can still look like we're doing okay. The resilient person actually is doing okay. You know, their body's doing well. They're not looking for ways to self-medicate. The resilient person really is, and the person who has learned to manage that stress really is. I mean, that they really are succeeding. So.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So I like how you started kind of like where you were before, and you kind of went into your why, but I want to know like what is the number one, what is your why for what you do every day?
Well, my honest why for what I do now every day, is because I practice this myself. I mean, I put this together essentially for myself so that I could have better life. I started doing the research, looking at things, saying, you know, how can I avoid burnout? How can I handle my child? But the reason why, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think of what the passion of teaching people stress management, because I truly want people to know that they don't have to live with stress. Like, they don't have to live feeling miserable. They don't have to live with the anxieties. And that's a real passion for me. So like, churches, nonprofits, things like that, I'm absolutely all over coming and just speaking with no charge. The company, if you're going from an angle of why'd you start a company up, my husband says it's just because I wanted to be a CEO of something. And I said, no, that's not true. The actuality is that the company was started up to be able to create something that can help with Aaron's medical expenses and something to give to her when she gets older. Because as much as I'm having to manage my stress, I'm not the one living with a chronic illness. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
she's the one that's going to have to know how to stand up after falling out in Walmart, twitching for 10 minutes. She's going to be the one that has to stand up and wipe off her brow and walk out. You know what I mean? So
sure.
All of this is pretty much based on wanting our family to enjoy life and not to have a chronic disease take every moment from us, because there's moments that are horrible. I mean, we have moments that, you know, you're prying her mouth open because it's filled with water and you've got to dump it out because she's seizing and you don't want her to aspirate it. And you're sitting in the middle of a Mexican restaurant and everyone's looking at you and you're like, ah, we're good. Thank you. You know, and it's so funny too, because my other two girls are cramming food in their face because they're like, oh, we're going to have to leave here. Eat as much as you can while my husband's paying the bill. And, you know, because they've learned that this is everyday life for us. I mean, this is everyday life. And so so I created the Rethink, Reframe, Relax, because it's something that I think that can truly, same as with your resilience training, obviously, but something that can truly help people to live better and to enjoy life more, kind of no matter what their situation is at the moment that they're in, that they can find ways to still manage their lives, I guess I could say. So managing the stress of what they're going through so they can enjoy their moments. I guess that's why I started it. That was a really long way to get around to why I did it. But I mean, I just, and it's not something anyone's actually ever asked me. So I'm sitting here, you know, going, I didn't bring tissues up here with me into my little studio. I have paper.
Now you're at your why.
Okay. Yeah, I do got my why. So I would really have something to leave for her. And I really want her to know these techniques, especially with mindfulness and especially with some of the breathing techniques that I teach and some of the reframing, because she's going to have a lot of people that say things, oh, well, you can't do that because of this and you can't do that because of this. And I don't want her to necessarily headstrong run out like a bull and be like, I can do it, when she probably shouldn't be, or maybe, you know, but I want her to be able to make wise decisions, to be able to make good self-evaluations and good decisions. And I think that's what the resilience and I think that's what the stress management kind of teaches you as well. It teaches you to make good decisions for yourself. So that's kind of why I created the program. So if I was going to create a program now, I might as well teach it to other people. But that's my why. That's my why.
Perfect.
So, and I will probably have to be, I will go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. No. Good.
I was going to say, I probably need to check in on your April 29th.
That'd be cool.
Shindig you're having, because it would be kind of cool to learn about some of the stuff that you're talking about, for sure. So I'll have to check you guys out in Raleigh. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next one we do, we can have you come and speak at our event and kind of show us some of what you're doing.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
You know what I mean?
So, that would be fun.
We've got 5 different countries that are following Blog Talk Radio, like Thailand, Norway, Canada, UK. I just want to thank everybody that has listened to the show and made this a success.
Cool.
And if you want to ask Meredith a question, the call-in number is 657-383-1109. Again, it is 657-383-1109. This is a live show, so if you have a legitimate question and you need help with something, now is the time to ask. Say yes and figure it out later. So let's go into the next section of what we're going to talk about. So I want to know, and I always ask this question to all my guests, looking back at everything that you've accomplished and looking back at everything that you've been through, what do you think with what you've built and how you're using it and you're teaching other people and how you're applying it in your life, what do you think was your transformation?
Explain that again.
We ask the hard questions on this show.
But I'm wanting to understand what you mean by. I want to know what you mean by what transformation.
So you told me,
because I've heard you ask someone else that before, and I was like, oh, okay, that's neat. But then so tell me again. Ask me again.
Okay, so looking back on where you started, because you told me where you started, you know, you were kind of freaking out about, you know, the medical stuff. You're like, man, how do I handle it? And then we learned in the bio about being a single parent, and it's just like there's a lot to deal with, right? So looking back at everything that you've done, whether it be starting from 18 to 20 to 25, but as you've journeyed through and you've built the reframe and the relax, and, like you've gone through this obvious transformation because you're teaching people how to not worry and not stress and live a better life, right? So how do you feel like you were transformed doing what you're doing, or what do you think was your transformation? I was one way and now I'm another, and this is how I transformed, or this was my transformation. This is what this show is all about.
Oh, okay. Well, more than likely, the transformation that happened for me was I was very tumbleweed, I guess you could say. Kind of things just like whatever came along, I kind of went with it. And one of the comments that my parents have said to me numerous times was when I say, I bet you didn't think I could get a master's degree in PhD prep program, no less. And my father looks at me and he says, I always knew you could. I just didn't think you would. Woodstock 1994, you know, very, very much charmed, super fun life. A tumbleweed, moved many, many times, tried to live in Atlanta, tried to do acting. But when I had my first daughter, you know, obviously I was like, okay, school's become very important, got kind of tied down there. That's when I became very, very wound. And so I think when I had my second daughter, I was even more wound because, now we've got the blended family. So actually I had two more daughters. But the fact that she had her disorder, that became, I became even more wound. And so I think the transformation went from me being kind of a tumbleweed, oh, everything's fine, do-do-do-do-do person to a completely wound, oh my gosh, it's chaos, oh my gosh, everything's going to be, you know, I have to do this, and I have to do that, and I must do this, and I should do that, and I should have done this, and I have to do this. And so I went from just the no cares at all to nothing but everything had to be perfect. And I think I finally transformed into somebody who has found that middle ground where I can tumble a little, but I can still have the balance to take care of what needs to be taken care of. Like with the time management things that I don't teach time management, but we talk about it in the workshops. We talk about, you know, where does time go and changing your perception of time, because time is not against you. Everyone has the same amount. Work smarter, not harder kind of thing. So the creating the rethink, reframe, relax kind of took me to a place where I'm not wound up anymore to the point where if I don't get something finished, and I'm not the procrastinating perfectionist anymore who doesn't start because she has to be perfect. I've gotten a nice balance there, but I'm also not the tumbleweed who was like, oh, it'll all work out, because people get hurt in those kind of, when you live that kind of lifestyle, you know, people around you suffer too. So I think as many people want to, you know, usually your transformation, you know, is, and then I became something spectacular. Mine is, then I became moderate. I guess
then
that's
became,
my transformation.
I slowed down. I went the other way.
Yeah.
I love that.
So,
and then
so
I became
that's
normal.
Sort of yeah. And then I became some may be considered normal. So, but that I guess would be my transformation. So
that's awesome.
And again, I've always had professors tell me use 10 words to answer questions. I've never been good at that. So
yeah, no, I don't either.
I need at least 100.
I could talk to myself and still, you know, I would still talk.
Learn a lot. I bet.
Yeah, I definitely get that.
I bet you learn a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So
I tell people whenever they, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I tell I tell people whenever they post something on Facebook that they think is ingenious, make sure they like it. And they say, you don't like your own post. And I'm like, well, then why are you posting it? Like, I don't understand. You got to like your own post.
I always like my own post.
Like,
pretty awesome. Like,
if I think it's amazing,
I'm like, I'm liking my own stuff. Well, and people, why are you liking your own post? I'm like, because I posted it, because I liked it. I'm showing that not only am I posting it, but I'm liking it. I double liked it. How about that? I'm overachieving. not only did I like it and shared.
It's like, I like my class so much, I'm going to show up and teach it. That's how much I like my class.
Right?
So you guys,
I love what I do so much. Yeah. I'm going to show up early. And I'm, you know, so you talked about time management. What I teach in resilience, and maybe I'm not the one to part of it, but I will tell you that in resilience class, when I'm teaching the class, I talk about how time management is crap and it's a myth and it's impossible to do. Because if you look at everybody's like, oh, I need more time management. I need a work-life balance. Oh my gosh, I need, and I'm not bagging anybody who says that. What I am telling you is that you're going about it the wrong way. Because 24 hours in a day will always be 24 hours in a day. You will always
have 60 seconds, 90 seconds. That's what's on my slide. Perfect. That's what's
you
on my
cannot,
slide because at the top, it's under perception. So, yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to do it. You can't manage time. It's impossible. So what I teach is for people to manage their energy. We do energy plots. So 8 a.m., 12 p.m., 4 p.m., and 8 p.m., okay? So 8 a.m., 12 p.m., 4 p.m., 8 p.m. At those points, I want you to scale 1 to 10 where you are on your energy scale. I want you to put 8 a.m., I want you to put a dot, and I want you to put another dot, and then draw a line. And so you can see your wave. You can see whatever. I am a freaking vampire, okay? I get all my work done at 1 a.m. I don't know why. God's gifted me with the ability to stay awake at stupid hours of the day. At
5 p.m., 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I'm dead.
Yep. 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. is my most creative. Most creative time of the day.
Too.
5 p.m. to 1 a.m. But guess what? Erin has meds, and her med routine has to start – it used to start every morning at 5:15. It wasn't an option.
Wow.
So my husband and I have been awake at 5:15. Well, now we're not. It's 6 o'clock now. We moved it. We were able to move it. So, but – we're awake at 6 a.m. every single day now since the last time we slept past 6 p.m. was October the 12th. That's the last day that we slept past 6 a.m. So it's one of those things where it's like when you just said that, I was like, oh, that's my energy time. Like, that's the time I'm the best is till 1 in the morning, but not when I have to get up at 6 a.m. So I've been trying to train myself. I've been trying to train myself to not be so bad about that. But I totally love that concept of you can't manage actual time. And that's what I talk about. I put that too in the big box. I say, and it's going under my changing perceptions because people will say, I need more time. It's like, well, what's your perception of time? Like what? And I do that with my students. I'll start a timer and then I'll talk to them and I'll talk to them and I'll talk to them. And it'll go beep, 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 and I'll stop it. I was like, okay, guys, that was a minute and a half. And they look at me like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it was a minute and a half. You know, like it felt like a long time. And I was like, it did. And then we'll do an activity. So I'm trying to show them for their exams because they wig out about time that a minute and a half is way longer than they think it is. Because a minute and a half, you can do so much. So I have these games I have them do to show how long a minute and a half is. And with mine, like you're talking about teaching the energies, and I've never heard about that, so I most definitely need to come to one of your trainings. I've never heard that in my life. I mean, I've heard about circadian rhythm and like when is your highest energy of the day and when are you most productive, but I've never heard it put that way. And I'm obviously not because it's your shtick. So I mean, I've not heard it that way.
Right.
So I think that's really cool.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
So, but yeah, I'd love to check it out. So, but the time thing, I teach them. Where can you put things like time? Where are your time wasters? Like, where are you wasting your time? Like, where is the wasted stuff? Like, where is the wasted moment? And I give them the example of mine for me. And again, I don't do training. It's one slide. And I talk about, you know, just be mindful of this kind of thing. I said my time waster for me was sitting in line waiting for my kids at school. Because what I'd have to do is get them home, get them fed, do all that. And then at night at 7, I'd pull up the computer and do my email. Well, I suddenly realized if I get my work email put on my phone, I can do my email while I'm sitting in this line. And then at 7, I can play my game or do something different that's more relaxing. So it's kind of like trying to find ways to be productive when you are, when you're at, you talked about, but ways you can, I guess, squeeze stuff in there to
sure.
time that's just kind of being wasted, time
right.
that's not being utilized. So.
And so what I do, though, is I tell people, like, if you have a huge project and you're not a morning person, mm-hmm. don't schedule it for the morning. If you know that you have a big workload and your energy is between, like, 8 and 10 a.m. and you're peaking at your energy, guess what you're going to do between 8 and 10? All of your work. You know, and they're like,
mm-hmm.
oh. I'm like, manage your energy like a gas tank. Okay?
Yep.
So if you are peaking
yep.
energy at noon, 1, 2, and 3, do all of your work there. If you know that
yep.
you're dead by 6 p.m., then don't schedule anything at that time. Like, I'm dead.
Yep.
I need a rest. And then if you need to, take a nap. Take a 20-minute nap. You know, don't go all the way to REM. Just do your 20 minutes and then set a timer, 20 minutes, have somebody wake you up, whatever. And then you just deposit that into your sleep bank. It's a sleep bank. I'm depositing it into my sleep bank. I'm depositing those 20 minutes each time. I'm just depositing into my sleep bank. And I guarantee your body will at some point in the next couple of days use that 20 minutes. It may not use it right away.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just recharging. So, absolutely.
I really like that.
So,
I really like that time. I really like that energy thing that you're talking about or the time slots, because I get so much work done between like 5 p.m. and like,
mm-hmm.
say, 8 or 9. I can
yep,
bust out so many videos, so many things. And it's unfortunate. And I used to do that. That used to be my time slot. But now with the life that I have, my time slot is from 8 a.m. until 3. And so I've been trying
right.
to fool my body into saying, hey, we can have good times between 11 and 3. Come on, let's get that work done. And it's just not it's not as efficient. So
yeah.
super awesome and stellar that occasionally I'll say, honey, I'm not coming home till 9. And he's like, okay, get some work done. So I'll come home at 12 for lunch, hang out with everybody till about 3, and then I'll leave. So it's
okay.
been something it's been something new I've been trying to do because I'm just so much more productive in the evening. So, but yeah, so I'm definitely going to have to check you out on April 29th because that sounds awesome.
So also you could take it a step further and go Sunday to Sunday. Where am I at on Sunday? Where's my energy on Sunday? Where am I at on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? And you could actually do it during the week on a scale of 1 to 10. Where do you feel like your energy is? My energy is low on Sunday's okay. It's okay. But like Monday, I'm kind of low. And then just, it's like seriously like a sliding scale. Like I'm kind of wham, I'm gone. I'm like evening Wednesday and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'm like, whew, I'm way up there energy. You know what I mean? And then I come way back down on Monday and then Tuesday and then wham, I'm way back up. So yeah, if you do like a Sunday to Sunday, you can really plot out your energy and say, man, I really got a lot to do like on Wednesday. I'm peaking on energy on Wednesday or I'm getting up in my scale. Maybe I'll just schedule my huge project or a meeting or something that's very, very important. Maybe I'll just schedule it on that day because the number one rule of success is to schedule your personal and professional development. I mean, it really is. That's number one rule. Schedule your personal and professional development. And so when you schedule things, you're more likely to do them. But if you schedule them at the correct moment, it elevates you to a more successful place. So that's just
very
my
cool.
2 cents on that. So I got a couple
I love
quick
it. That was like a nickel. That was like a nickel, at least a nickel. Very
okay.
cool. Well, I was going to tell you something.
I'll give you that knowledge for
remember,
free.
remember we talked about the problematic thinking and all of that. One of the things that we do with the stress workshop is we do the training of how to reframe the problematic thinking. So we actually have, you know, worksheets that we do to work through changing the problematic thinking. And one of the statements of problematic thinking is I don't have enough time. And I think I'm going to add to some of the, you know, answers that I can tell them are potential. Of course, I have everybody doing the worksheet and I walk around and I look at everyone's and I'm like, well, that's interesting, yada, yada, yada. But one of the things is I don't have enough time is one of the ones that they can choose. There's a list of like 40 problematic thoughts.
Oh, wow.
They then reframe. And so as they're reframing them, I'm going around the room saying, well, how does that change the vibe or the feeling of or the energy of
sure.
that statement? How does it take the power away from the statement? So anyways, but I don't have enough time one. I think now I'm going to say a good thing to say is I am not at my peak hour right now. This can wait.
Right. Yeah, sure.
So I think I'm going to add that to my
absolutely.
List. So yes, what else you got for me?
So I got a couple quick questions for you. Ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real quick, what was the best part about your transformation so far, or about your journey? What was like the best part?
The absolute best part about my journey is that I am honestly and legitimately being able to enjoy my daughter play. Because
cool.
It used to be that I was so freaked. And also my husband and I, she sleeps in the bed with us because she has nocturnal seizures. And but we now have a video camera that we finally kind of saved up to get that has ultraviolet light. And so it's in the bed with her. And I am at a place now where I'm comfortable watching the video camera. I don't have to have her in the same room with me 24/7. I'm giving her more independence, but I think the biggest thing is that I'm actually enjoying her as a kid now, instead of looking at her as someone I'm just caring for that I need to make better. And then also through this, I've gotten a closer attachment with her as a mom, because I've let go of the fear of losing her, because you can lose anyone. But that fear of, it's a reality for her. I mean, she's died twice in my arms. They brought her back to me. So the reality is it could happen at any moment. But that's not the reality where I live anymore. So I think that's the most powerful.
Wow.
The most powerful thing of the transformation from what I've been working on and studying. So
yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. So do I even want to ask what the worst part about your transformation was?
Well, the worst part about my transformation, is I am having to figure out how to manage my energy better.
There you go.
That way to say, I don't have enough time.
Yeah.
That's the worst part about my transformation, because I do work, my bread and butter is obviously my institution. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it or not, but I work at Piedmont Technical College in Greenwood, South Carolina. And we are extremely progressive with regards to pushing the envelope of new technology, new teaching methods. I'm a lead teacher for a lot of things. I'm in lean training. I'm moving up into yellow belt training. So, I mean, we're very, very progressive, and they come first. They butter my bread. And so next is obviously then Rethink, Reframe, Relax, which I do kind of on the side, because making PowerPoints and creating content is fun. And everything that I've created, so like a little book that I've written, but we'll see what happens with that. But I'm finding pulling myself back from that and saying, okay, family, get the family together. So we have Avatar family night now, where we watch Avatar every night together, or we watch some kind of cartoon together every night. And we make sure to do that every night, even if it's only 15 or 20 minutes. So I think balancing my energy, and my husband's decided to stay home with the kids, to go to school. He's staying home with the kids. And so remembering to tell him what a good job he's doing as well, because that's a hard stick right there. It's a hard thing to do, to take care of kids and a family, you know. So, but remembering to, and then also giving up a little bit of the control of being the one who did everything. So that's been the hardest part of my transformation. Actually, that is the hardest part of transformation. Giving up control has probably been the hardest part of my transformation, knowing that I can't do it by myself. I was in a place where everyone would say, we don't know how you do this. How do you do this? How do you do this? Before I had Aaron. And then with Aaron, I remember calling a friend at 2 a.m. and saying, I'm sorry to bother you, but I really need someone to come get Ashley. I'm still at the hospital with Aaron, and and she needs to get home. And so, you know, calling friends for help, leaning on my husband for help. It's been something that, coming from such a place of independence, been the hardest part of my transformation, honestly, to come around to going to the hardest part. But being able to manage and balance things is the hardest part. So, and giving up control for sure. My family will say it's giving up control.
Yeah. So who has been your biggest influencer?
My biggest influencer, from a standpoint of knowledge and information, probably, I mean, we could get into like the whole Albert Ellis and all of those people, but from like a human being that I hang out with or talk to, I had a I had an instructor, a professor named Georgina Hammack at my in graduate school. And I walked in with a bunch of papers one day and I said, are you sure I'm doing okay for you? And she just stopped and looked at me. She says, you know you're intelligent, right? And I looked at her and I was like, I said, no, I just work hard. And she said, do you really believe that? And I said, yeah, I just work hard. And she said, no, 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 you're intelligent. And I stood there for a minute and I went, well, I guess I am. So I think that's a long time ago, obviously, that that happened because I was in graduate school. But I think that, I'm sorry, my alarm just went off for meds for my child. I forgot to turn it off my phone. Still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hello? Okay, awesome. But yep. I think that she was influential to kind of flip that switch in my head, because for years, years and years and years, I did not believe that I was an intelligent person. I just believed that I worked hard, and that's why I was able to do things. But finding out that I might actually be smart made me feel more confident.
Yeah.
So she's been one of a huge inspiration. She's a cancer survivor as well. 5 years. We've been close friends now for about 15 years. We don't get to see each other as often. But then, you know, I could also mention, you know, influences like my father, who's just a workhorse, slash one of the most compassionate and dead-on, spot-on, hardcore people that I've ever met. My mom, of course, is always going to be involved in my life. And we've had, you know, the issues have made me who I am. So when it comes to taking one person and saying who's influential, I'm the person that could find you 40 people who have made a piece
That's
of my
awesome.
Life be better. I mean, I could literally, Tamitha, I have a reason for her, my husband, obviously, people that have hurt me. I mean, I could tell you how they made me a better person. I mean, I just don't know if there's any one person, and I'm even now thinking, oh my gosh, who else should I mention in case I play this blog show for my friends? You know, because there are just so many people that have, over the course of time, inspired me or made me into a better person. I mean, even coming down to the woman, one of my best things I learned in my entire life ever was in San Antonio, Texas. I was sitting next to a large African-American female. She was homeless. You know, the smell was fantastic, but I used to go sit and hang out with her because I told you I was a tumbleweed. But in high school, I used to go sit and hang out with her in downtown San Antonio, and I was sharing my sandwich with her one day, and I said, you know, I'm really upset because I didn't get that part, and I was kind of whiny, and she looked over at me, she said, what part? And I said, I didn't get that part in the play I wanted really bad, and she looked at me, and she said, girl, someday you'll have your chance. If they want Aunt Jemima, they ain't going to pick Cindy Crawford. And I was like, you're right. She said, there's a part for you somewhere. Someday they're going to want you.
Yep.
And I just looked at her and I was like, you know, right? You're right. Someday they're going to want me. So one of the most inspirational things I've ever heard in my entire life came from a woman named Norma who lives on the streets of San Antonio, Texas, who I used to share a sandwich with 3 or 4 days a week. So, you know, it's I mean, one
never
of the
know.
Things about, oh, you just don't know. I mean, you just never know. And so I honestly cannot pinpoint just one person who has been most influential in my life, because all of the pieces of all of the people that I have in my life basically created for me a foundation that is just rock solid, rock solid.
Perfect.
And of course, you know, then you can get into the religious things as well. But I mean, from a human being standpoint, I love human beings. I love people. I absolutely love people. And meeting them, getting to know them, hearing, the, like you say, their stories, it's something that just has always fascinated me and brought me lots of inspiration. So I can't answer your question,
awesome.
Sean.
So as we close and as we wrap up, give me a shameless plug. Like, this is your moment. Like, this shameless plug, a friend, a quote, websites, Facebook, yay, go McDonald's or your favorite sports. Like, give
okay,
me a shameless
sure.
plug. Plug whatever you want.
Okay, so there's www.rethinkreframerelax.com. There's my blog is there. I am working on an online class to make it kind of affordable for people to be able to get in there and learn about stress, managing their stress. So I'm working on the online site. So the website's looking good. So check it out. Check out the blog. But Rethink, Reframe, Relax, if you Google that, Rethink, Reframe, R-E-F-R-A-M-E, it's a fake word. So but it'll say it's spelled wrong. But Rethink, Reframe, Relax. If you Google that, you'll find me eventually. But check out the website, check out the blog. The online class is probably going to roll out. I'm alpha testing it now, and going to be going into beta, and then I'm probably not going to roll it out till it's looking like May now. But in May there's going to be an affordable online class that people can take if they want to.
Sure.
So, and that's me. I don't have that many fancy things going on, but I do have a website,
perfect.
So that's good. So
yeah, good, good. So as we wrap up, deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire.
My best nugget of knowledge. Okay, well, my best nugget of knowledge is probably going to be, stop for a moment, look around you, take a big, huge, deep breath, and then blow it out, and then continue walking forward. I mean, that's honestly my best nugget of knowledge. Just take a moment.
Mic drop.
To embrace the moment. Just take the moment to
Mic
embrace
drop.
The moment. So.
Yep. Outstanding. It's part of the mindfulness techniques, you know, see, hear, and feel. You know, what do you feel? What do you see? What do you hear? You know, it's being present.
Oh,
and
sure.
I love that. Just being present in the moment.
And
huge.
And I was stressing out about a test, stressing out about something I had to do. And I was stressing out about it. And I was writing and I was writing and I was typing and I was typing. And suddenly I said, you know what? I need to stop. I put my hands in my lap. I took a big, deep breath. And I heard my daughter giggling in the other room when I took a big, deep breath. And I was like, that was worth more money than ever. So yeah, that just has to be the takeaway, to stop, big deep breath, and then respond instead of reacting. So
perfect.
That's my
awesome
take home.
So we're gonna close, and when we close, we always give a call to action. So what would your call to action be? What should someone do today that will change their life? Maybe buy a product or a book, or maybe set a goal,
okay,
or write in a journal.
Okay.
Like, what is your call to action?
Google progressive muscle relaxation, because I'm telling you right now, this is research database stuff. This is not like, oh, it makes you feel good, but Google progressive muscle relaxation. It's a technique. You can do it in a chair. I do it laying down because I like to go to sleep doing it. If you have a bad back or something like that, obviously you don't want to tense your back up too much, but you know, read through some Googling progressive muscle relaxation, because it is a technique that is awesome and it is game-changing with regards to sleep. Oh, and don't leave your television on when you sleep. I know I just upset a lot of people, but don't do it. You don't want light when you're sleeping. So, yeah, but
why not?
That's it. Oh, because the light...
Why can't you leave your TV on?
Because you want sound is okay, but the light makes your melatonin won't... your body stops producing melatonin when there's light, because it believes that it's still supposed to be in action. So it kind of tricks the body into thinking that you're supposed to be doing something. So the less light. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I know. I break hearts when I say that. But, you know, if it works for you, though, it works for you. If you don't have trouble sleeping, you don't have trouble sleeping. But if you do, progressive muscle relaxation and get the lights out. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been an incredible, incredible knowledge and inspiration and motivation, and I know the listeners will appreciate it. So thank you Meredith for coming on the show and being a guest on the show.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. So I'll catch you on April 29th.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to connecting. So Life Transformation Radio listeners, this has been another episode of Life Transformation Radio, and I thank you and thank you and thank you for supporting us in what we're doing, and, you know, just tuning in every week on Wednesdays and every other Friday. And we have amazing guests all the time, even talking about reframing and relaxing and living to win, and, you know, having the guests that we have, but it's all about elevating our life. And what I need you to do is I need you to find opportunities to live out your values, every day. We call it living your brand. So today, tomorrow, and until we meet again, live your brand. This is another episode of Life Transformation Radio. See you next time.